Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. For those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive influence in the world together. Now, we know that the show is called Answers, and today we're looking for answers to the question, are violent shows and video games triggering real violence? Our guest, Frieda Birnbaum, PhD, is a research psychologist and psychotherapist, as well as an award-winning author. She's an expert on topics such as family dynamics, parenthood, relationships, addiction, anxiety, and depression. Dr. Frieda is a seasoned media personality and commentator who is adept at discerning the psychological underpinnings of current issues, such as our main question today, as well as parsing the psychological profiles of various newsmakers, politicians, celebrities, criminals, etc. I got to tell you, I think we could do a whole show on profiles of the current newspapers, politicians, and celebrities today. Frieda, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you so much. Just a pleasure to be on. Thank you.
Okay. Sam, I can just barely hear Frieda, and I've got my thing turned up pretty well. Is there something we can do with the volume? Okay. So, Frieda, before we get to our topic today, can you share what triggered your interest in this area and drove you to research it?
You know, we have so much going on in our lives today. I don't know if you can hear me better. I have the mic here. Maybe that would help you or not. Let me know if that does help you.
Yeah, it does help a little bit.
Oh, good. So what's going on today with everything, with crimes? Where are they coming from? And it's interesting. The answer, do violent shows trigger real violence? Guess what? The answer is no, it does not. And in Europe, actually, they have more violent shows and they have less violence. So go figure that out. But there are reasons why there has been an increase in violence. And we were talking about pandemic, unemployment, underprivileged communities, all that has combined with problems in the medium of the social society that we live in. We need more health care. People coming out of prison need to continue to be rehabilitated. So we need more Medicare, Medicaid, all kinds of interventions today that have nothing to do with violence as far as the media.
When you say violence in the media, are you talking about now the video games and TV shows and movies? Does that also include the violence now in this day and age to where the network news is essentially war on TV and anybody watching it knows that's real, that's not pretend?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. It's a very important question. You know, it's true we have violence all around us, of the media and the politics and what's going on and with war and Ukraine. And it's very difficult for me not to put on the radio and for my sons not to hear all this. But what we really are living in today, and we're talking about the mediums of television, radio, movies, that has not really affected us the same way. But the one thing that really has affected us is gaming. These kids, the teenagers, preteens, they're affected by it, but not in the way of violence. They're affected by it in the way of being bullies. They have anxiety. They get depression from it. And there's a certain amount of time. If a child plays these games more than 9 hours a week, that's really a problem because the frontal cortex of the brain is developing still, and they're more prone to aggression. So we have to look at what amount of time these kids, our children, can really go ahead and feel free and comfortable. Well, an hour and a half is good. That's an hour and a half a day. Maybe even if you can postpone it for a week, that's even better, because they do get something out of it. They learn how to have quick reflexes, how to mingle with other kids in a group. So it is good if it's done a certain amount of time.
Well, how much of this has a numbing effect, you know, where you have a child that's using one of the video games to where their whole goal is to go in and to kill everything that moves in a particular city? How much of it is it really a numbing effect to where we're sending signals from our brain to our hand to look down a rifle scope and to start shooting things? How much of that now just numbs them to the point that now when you have somebody that is not on a video game and yet are capable of doing something like that?
Well, we have to talk about all aspects of this person's relationship and what's going on in their lives. So it's not necessarily only video gaming. It has to do with being accepted in society. It has to do with their own anxiety and depression, where they see themselves socializing. That's all a big compass, a big part of it. Now, the relationship between gaming and that is often these type of people are mostly children, kids, teenagers, will isolate themselves by making this their reality. And that can become dangerous if they have predispositions to this kind of depression and anxiety. Because, you know, if you don't develop mentally, if you're not face-to-face, if you can't read people, if you're not out there, then you don't have the skills to really have the right kind of relationship in the world. So that is a problem. But it's often from children who already have to distance themselves from other people. So we have to really sort that out, see what kind of kids they are, and help them and talk to them. And even if I'm talking to anyone who is going to school, if you see somebody who's sitting alone, go over there, make friends, listen to them, because often that can be the answer to all the violence that could be ahead for them.
Well, and what I hear you saying is that let's start from kindness, and I couldn't agree more. Now, we have a question that's coming in. Again, I thank those that take the time to send these questions in. This one reads, I thought this type of violence was proven to be detrimental to our children's brains about 25 years ago, and I raised my son accordingly by limiting time watching violence on television and maximizing opportunities for outdoor activities. Why do you believe the amount of violence on screens have grown exponentially anyway? It's from David in California.
Well, you know, what happens was we sort of get immune to what we see. And it's like anything in our society. Look at the way people are dressing today. We need to hype it up more and more. Soon it's not going to be any clothing. What can I tell you? I'm getting away from the topic. But really, it's the same thing with violence. You know, we saw that already last year. What else is new? So they need to keep people involved, and they pull them in. But yes, it's true that they're numb to it after a while. And that's why violence does not promote more violence. But aggression and bullying is promoted when you're playing these games to be aggressive and to kill and to go at someone. So if somebody bothers you or says something wrong, you don't feel any repercussions when you become more aggressive. And that's really more of the concern, because in today's society, the kids, even though after the pandemic, are spending way too much time away from nature. They're becoming more obese. Especially young boys, doors are closed. They're in their rooms and parents are worried. I mean, my practice, I have parents that are worried that their kids are not connecting to them. They won't even come down for dinner. So that is more prevalent. And that is something we really need to look at to be able to say, you know what? there are good things about this. There are good things that you learn how to connect to other people. But we do need to get these kids outdoors into society. And that's why violence in the media has more of a numbing effect today. We just have seen it so often already. It doesn't really feel that we are living in this real world of violence. This is where we've gone. I hate to say this. It's really gotten extreme.
Well, and I agree with you in regards to especially the part about getting outdoors. Let's talk about how we can achieve some of these things, because it sounds like some of the things would be to not only just focus on it, but as parents to set boundaries in regards to how much of this, again, and it doesn't have to be necessarily violent games, but gaming in general, is going to be allowed or accepted. I know many parents that I've talked to, it becomes something that's an earned right. You know, you get to have, you know, an hour's worth of video game after you finished your homework or after dinner or something. What are some suggestions that you have? And I, at the same time, I know in saying this, I've dealt with many parents that don't feel that they even have the ability to have that much control.
You know, it's hard to have control when all the peers are doing it. There's peer pressure. And what is everybody else doing it? So it's a way of socializing, too. It's not just playing with the games, but all the friends get together and they're looking forward to it. So we need to sublimate activities and for these kids to be unconditioned and to be conditioned in the right way. So what do we mean by the right way? It's really fun to go out there. You can be just as competitive playing tennis, golf, riding your bicycle, hiking. There's all kinds of stuff there that you can feel that you have a challenge in your life. It doesn't have to be virtual. Virtual is becoming reality. And that's something that after a while, your, as I said, your frontal cortex, and especially when you're a teenager, that's really sort of cemented into your adulthood. And after a while, that's the go-to place to be. I mean, it used to be more football, and you know, adults would run to that. And now today, they're running to see, I'm talking about adults. They're running to see who they can, I don't know, I wrote some of these names down, that they know all about it. So we need to rearrange our lifestyle and what our lifestyle means. This computer is wonderful. Look, we can talk to each other. We can have FaceTime. We can socialize. But what about picking up the phone when you want to talk to somebody? What about hanging out together, taking a walk and talking? You know, we need to be able to read signals from other people and also know that, especially when you're looking at Facebook, that not everybody's happy. They just put that in there, you know, when they're going to a party. I went on this bus, whatever it was, party, party bus. And this woman gets on, you know, with the pole in the middle, pretends she's drunk. She's falling down. She's showing, you know, how pathetic is that? That we have to go to such extremes. My suggestion, don't even go on Facebook, because it does create anxiety and depression. Most people are not always partying and happy all the time. And when you talk to somebody face to face, you can see that they have expressions when they're happy, when they're not happy. And you can see that you're allowed to have your ups and downs, so you don't feel like, oh, what's wrong with me? That actually you're part of the normal process. So really, our biggest concerns are how we communicate with each other over the violent movies that they have out there and what the implications of those communications mean. We can text very easily. You know, even dating sites. Oh, I'm not going to call him. I'm going to text. Nobody text, because, you know, when you text, you can think of what you're going to say. When you email, you can think ahead of what you're going to do. But you can't be spontaneous. And isn't that fun to talk about having feelings? We're getting remote from a feeling population to an intellectualized population. And then it's going to be robots and we won't know the difference. Let's not become robots. Let's connect to feelings. And these movies that we're talking about, these shows that we're talking about, will really be insignificant because the children and the adults will find ways to connect together. And I remember, and then I'll zip it for a minute. I remember my parents, when I was at home a child, every weekend we'd change places where we would gather. So the kids from the families, the adults from the families, we'd play games, we would talk, we would laugh together. We're relying too much on other sources to become who we are by not learning from each other directly.
Well, you just said something, and I have to disagree where you had mentioned in regards to that we're going from a feeling, society to a more intellectual. I'm sorry, but I think it seems like it's just the opposite, because we seem to have people that say, because I feel this, somehow that makes it a reality versus intellectually thinking things through and saying, intellectually, that doesn't make any sense.
That's true. That's a very interesting point you're making. But because of that, though, anxiety comes in, because when you're feeling a certain way, but you're behaving another way, there's a conflict, and that creates anxiety. So, yes, feeling and being there in virtual, on a virtual level, is something that does not really connect, because you can't use those feelings right now. Not that you want me to or I want to. I can't really give you a hug because you're over there. It's different. So that conflict creates anxiety because you can't really follow through. There's only so much you can do with feelings being virtual. So going back to, we need to go back in time. Yes, the internet is a wonderful way to find things out. My son that's in college, what he's doing, he knows about the world. He comes down for mm-hmm. dinner. He can talk about politics. He can talk about anything. It's wonderful. So it's not necessarily that your kids are in lockdown there, depressed and in the dark and shooting people and killing people. You can use it for different reasons. And you're right. Parents do need to measure what the children are doing. I have a patient who's in his teens who started taking Benadryl because it gave him a high. And I said, that's why he started coming to me to begin with. I said, where'd you get that? And he said his father, he watches TikTok. And they said, this is a fun thing to do. Some kids have hung themselves because TikTok took them on a dare. Let's see how high you get a high from that. This stuff is really, when we're talking about dangerous, I'm happy to say my treatment is helping. He's no longer taking it. But just imagine, you're very vulnerable to believe and trust at this stage. And this is what's more prevalent, what's going on, because the schools, and I live in a great neighborhood, drugs all around us. Let's think about that kind of violence. Mm-hmm. It's like we used to smoke cigarettes. Now it's drugs.
Yeah. You brought up a point when you mentioned about, I think you said your son, when he comes downstairs for dinner. I think that's another huge issue, which is the family dinner, the family getting together, taking their phones, leaving it in another room or something so that you can talk about, as you said, politics or what their day was like or what they like, what they don't like, whatever it is. It gives us as parents an opportunity to listen. And if everybody's sitting at the table and they have their little phone in front of them while they're taking bites, this is not a level of communication that I think is healthy.
Actually, it's so true. And what's even more important is that when you even talk about nothing, the child feels secure that when something big happens, they're used to talking to you and they will share that with you as well. So it's true. The communication is very important. And it's not when there is a big issue to say what happened. Why aren't you doing well in school? Who are you hanging out with? Find out all along. And one of the best times I find to do that, even sometimes more than having dinner together, is being in the car together. Because then you're really stuck. There's nowhere for you to go. I mean, be careful, because there are couples who argue very well in cars. They just horrible. I tell them to stop the car and get out. But that's another part of the relationships I work with. But yes, it's a good time when you're driving kids somewhere. You know, I'm always, my husband will say, do you want to go? I say, yes, because that's the time that we really have that they unwind and they talk to me. They don't have to look at me, which is good for them too. They can be distracted, and it's an unconscious level of communication. So those are the things that parents are having dinner, having meals, having downtime together, talking about the little things in life that are not important. Then they'll feel safe talking about the big things. That is really a wonderful substitute from this virtual reality that they're so hooked on. And by the way, it is addictive, excuse me. They do this on purpose. They have scores. You can win contests and things, and they keep increasing the challenge more and more. So the kids do become addicted to this, just like anything else that you keep overdoing, you can become addicted to as well.
Well, I'm so glad that you brought up the part about being in the car. I had another guest on probably 6 months ago, I think, and they talked specifically about the communication in the car, and they highly recommended it. And they said one of the reasons is that you're not making eye contact, and that for some reason, the kids are more comfortable opening up, and it allows you to listen to them. And they know that you're not going to go into some real deep or heavy thing while you're driving, and somehow they feel more comfortable. And I had never thought of it that way, but I'm glad you brought up it because it reminded me of that, and hopefully many of our listeners as well.
And not only that, Alan, it's much less intense because after all, think about it. You have to concentrate on the traffic and the lights and whatever. So you're not on top of them all the time. So it gives them a little bit of a back and forth type of relaxed communication, whether you want to do it or not, but it just so happens.
Yep. Okay, so we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we have a question that's coming in that has to do with a mother that is concerned about video games and not necessarily just with her children.
Oh.
So when we come back, we're going to talk about that. That's Stay with us. You're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network. Our guest is Frieda Birnbaum, and we are talking about violence on TV, violence in movies, and so many other things. But we had a question that came in, and this one reads, my husband has been playing video games from the Nintendo days, and now our three children have followed in his love of this activity. Unfortunately, I do not find it to be healthy, as many of them are violent in nature. Getting any of them to spend time out in the nature or outdoors at all is very challenging. Do you have materials or videos that would help me convince my husband of the dangers I feel these games present to our family? This is from Alexi in Montana.
Well, I don't have videos to give you, but you can look them up. I'm sure they're there. Important thing to realize is that you can look at it as a benefit if there's a certain time involved. So if it's for an hour, okay. If it's once a week, okay. So if you limit the time, that really has a beneficial effect. The other thing is when they have this addiction, which it sounds like, you have to be able to see that your husband and your relationship with your husband is very important. So what's going on with that? Why isn't he listening? Why isn't he respecting what you have to say? Maybe you have something to say that's going to help him as well. So yes, there's a certain part of gaming and helping yourself with that by having this competitive type of sport, by connecting to one another and learning how to be team players. That's very healthy. That's very good, but to a point. And then after that, you need to compromise with your husband. This is not about the kids. This is more about your relationship with your husband and for him to promote what it is that you want to them. You know, mom is right. Let's go out. I'd like to try hiking. It's a beautiful day. We haven't been on our bikes for a while. Let's try it. He doesn't have to agree with you. He doesn't have to think that you're right, but he does have to connect with what you are saying. It's not who's right or wrong. It's the effect of it. And he shouldn't be so stubborn and be a child himself. So you have three kids doing this, not two. And he has to grow up and get out there and do his job, because right now he's not doing a good job.
You know, it reminds me of something that I told a parent one time when we were discussing, and this was more when I was working with Adolescent Services Company that I founded. And everything that I would tell her to do, and she'd say, well, I can't do that because they won't like me, meaning the kids. And after about three times of that, and I said, let's stop for a minute and let me explain something to you. Your children do not need a 45-year-old best friend. They need a parent. And your job as parent is not always easy, but it's the job that you took on. So I suggest you focus on that.
It's so true. You know, I find that in my practice also, when people get the angriest at me, it's when I have the most effect. So yes, you can't be, you know, and they walk out the door. They really physically leave, especially don't talk politics to your patients. Because we're talking about Trump, and he was going to kill me, I thought, but that's all right, I'm still alive. But the thing is, you can't really expect to be friends. You need to be able to have a result, to have an impact. And don't have such a big ego. Don't think about who likes you, who doesn't like you, who cares. If you want to get what you want, and this is just a formula in life, often the more you get what you want, the less people like you anyway, because you're not doing what they think you should be doing. And then they have to look at themselves and say, wait a minute, who's right or wrong? They don't want to be wrong. So I'm just saying in general, with what we're talking about, the direction we're going. See, I forgot the question already because I'm just talking. Was there a specific question I want to make sure I answer? Your question. Was there, Alan, or am I just talking?
No. I think you not only answered it, but you added some other valuable information.
Yeah, just to make sure that we need to be able to not be friends. We need to be parents. We need to be the authority. Children thrive more with authoritative parenting, which means support and structure. Those two things, not to be indifferent, not to let them do what they want, or not to be the one that's always telling them that they better. You can't be the one that's always in charge. They have to learn. They have to thrive. They have to be themselves. They can't be your clone. They're not going to be like you. They may be too loud. I remember once I was in the restaurant, and my little boy at the time, was a man sitting next to him, next to us over there, said to me, Mommy, why doesn't that man have any hair? Well, I was so upset. And I said, oh, my God, this is... Who cares? It doesn't represent you. This is a little boy. Our kids cannot be us. We have to be able to be a parent.
And not only that, but as you were saying that, I was smiling because I thought if the gentleman next to him, has a sense of humor, he probably looks down at the child and says, well, you know, after I got older and I didn't eat all my vitamins and minerals and everything that I needed, you know, the hair started to fall out. So
you're funny. That's a great answer. I love it. I remember that next time.
Yeah.
That's a great answer. You're funny.
So let's talk a little bit about, what do you believe you know, the results are going to be if we just leave these things unaddressed. I mean, so much so we kind of have this thing going around in society that, you know, we should just leave everything as it is. And, you know, if it's not hurting anybody, don't try to change anything. And I think that we've gone too far with this, and we need to really address things, look at how it's affecting our society, and then see what we can do that's sort of a win-win way to approach it. But my question is, what if we don't? What do you see for us in the future?
I'm more concerned about the negative effects on children as far as what they're doing. I mean, we started with the pandemic and what they're doing with their lives developmentally, because that's going to be a progression of events into adulthood and how they see themselves and how they respond and how productive they are in their lives. That's more of a reality of what we should be concerned of. The other thing that I started talking about at the beginning was about people that have violence against them and violent acts, mostly not because research showed, not because of movies and TV and the media, because of their environment, underprivileged, mm-hmm. Leaving prison and not having any kind of rehabilitation, needing Medicaid, needing mental health assistance, social services. Those are our real realities. So the two areas that we talked about today, and research has shown that violence, and I have it right in front of me here, violent movies does not promote, does not promote violence. So it's hard to believe that, because when you go out, it's who you were when you came in, what you brought with you. It's not a long progression of events. It's 1 hour, it's an hour and a half. As I said before, it's the time. It's this video gaming is not bad or good. It's the time that you spend on it that makes it either bad or good. The violence we see is not bad or good either. If it's an hour and a half, we have to look and see what is your mental health to begin with. And mm-hmm. the underlying theme is, if there are people with a pathology that do need help, we need to go ahead and see that. We need to see it before it happens, before there's aggression, gun control. What's going on with that? Those are the underlying current of events. A mother leaving a gun out and a 6-year-old taking the gun and shooting at a teacher. Who's responsible? The parent. Why is she leaving a gun out? And who should really be held accountable? So those are the things we need to change and we need to see. But by all means, the first thing, if you see someone who's not acting themselves, who is really not connecting to other people, who seems anxious and depressed, the best thing you can do is spend the time to listen to that person, to befriend that person, because the most violent mass shooters are the ones that came from unstable situations where they were outsiders. That's what we need to do in the schools.
And what I hear you saying, we're coming back to kindness now and how important it is to focus on that, which is not what we are shown is happening. If anybody watches anything that's political or whatever, they're not seeing kindness. There was a time in which we could watch a political debate and it would start out with a respectfully disagree and then explain their point. How much do you think that is affecting now a shortage of kindness in the way in which our kids are choosing to relate to another young person?
You know, politics, I remember Nixon and Kennedy. You remember that they were on TV?
Yep.
They were the first competitors in the political arena to be on TV. And Nixon was sweating, and he really rehearsed and prepared, and Kennedy was on a yacht having fun. So we already, right? And he's the one that everybody liked better because he was relaxed and he whatever.
But he was comfortable.
He was comfortable. And so from there on, we've not been in politics where, oh, this is what he said and this is what it is. No, this is the visual orientation. This is the way they go around it. So who do we trust? Do we trust Republicans? I mean, we think of Republicans, we think of Trump right away. And, you know, is this going to be a fun thing? Is it going to be for entertainment? Are we comfortable with this? What about the Democrats? They could do the same thing and they could get away with it. See, don't throw anything at me now. But it's true. You know, who's really what? And who is what was it that Trump said in the beginning? False, fake news? I never heard that before. But he was right. We can't trust that either. It's a different time we live in. And so we really have to investigate, do our research. We have to be hands-on. It's not as cozy and comfortable as it used to be. So we go to doctors. There's more information on the internet that the doctors don't even know about. Politicians, what's really going on behind the scene? How much have they been hiding? And how progressive are they? And what difference is that making? So yes, there's a lot of things out there that are not really what they appear to be. And we need to be able to have the right answers. We need to be proactive. So we're talking about today two things. We're talking about one where we're passive participants in the movies, in the theater, how it affects us. And then another part of it is how to be proactive and how to make changes in our lives and society and how it's going to affect us. But doing gaming and being in virtual reality over there, it's not reality, perception, it's not going to help us to be proactive in real life. It's going to keep us from getting all this information.
One of the things that you just mentioned, do your research. And again, as an international detective, it's something I absolutely believe in. One of the thoughts that I had while you were explaining, and you explained a particular study that was done, And I suggest that everybody does this. You read a study, do your homework, find out who funded that study, because it may change how you feel about it.
Yes, you do, really do. You really do have to be able to know where the source is coming from. And then again, if we spend so much time with our gaming here, we're not going to be able to have time to do what my son does. So he comes down, you could use it this way, with a wealth of information as if he traveled around the world. He knows about science. He knows about technology. He knows about politics. I mean, you name it, he's so versed. And that's going to help him in the future how to communicate appropriately. So I'm telling your viewers that, yes, you can use it in a way that's especially helpful to your life. It's like going to school in a way that we could never ever take advantage of it before.
We have another question, and I'm looking, we have about 5 minutes left. And this question reads, I'm really looking forward to this interview. I personally feel that too many movies, TV shows, bias news, and games may be influencing our youth to think that violence is exciting and even acceptable. Is there any data or research on this that you are aware of that measures the brain and heart activity or even psychological evaluations on the effects of these types of media on our children? And this is from Henry in Nevada.
Well, it's true. There has been a lot of research about this, statistics about this. I didn't want to bring it in, so I just brought in the results of the research because I feel that people, when I read these things to them, they really want to skim over it. And what I did was I took all these and I went ahead and I researched that that showed that the first 10 or 20 minutes of violent gaming increases activity in the brain regions associated with arousal, anxiety, and emotional reaction while stimulating, whatever it is, activity and the frontal lobe associated with emotions, regulation and executive control. I didn't want to read that stuff to you, but I have in front of me pages of this stuff. Right. It's just going to put you to sleep. So I'm just saying, I'm a researcher, and I've done much research, as I said before, but people don't want to hear the statistics, the amount. I have here also that so, you know, Albert Bandura in the 1960s, he researched, it's called the Bobo Doll Experiment, anyway, so that these forms of entertainment, we're starting to see consequences after viewing at it for a certain amount of time. So what I did, I just compounded the whole thing and said, yes, 9 hours a week is too much. Yeah. An hour and a half, 2 hours is a nice amount of time. So I just wanted to be more relatable, but absolutely 100%, all this that I'm talking about has been fully researched with violence as well. Zero violence, according to, and I can give you the researcher's name if you want that.
Well, what I'd like to do is, you know, let's sort of close on a high note, because one of the things is that we all know there are some true benefits from gaming. So what are some of the surprising benefits that you found to gaming, as long as it's in moderation?
Well, it teaches you how to be competitive. You know, we're talking about 40% of, if you want statistics, I have it here, of middle school girls and 60% of middle school boys find that gaming can have a positive effect, or it can have a negative effect and create more aggression. But to work with the community, to be a group player, it's very much like sports. You learn to be a group player with other kids. You also learn, as I've mentioned, how to react quickly to a consequence. So that is something else that you can use when you're taking tests, when you have to have information as well. So it's something that's good if you play with someone else, not to do it alone. It's different. When you have one person right next to you, it becomes a social engagement as well. So it's not completely some kid in a room, the bedroom with darkness and closed, depressed, and just playing games mindlessly. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be this way. And it can be something that can be really very positive.
Absolutely. Now, Frida, unfortunately, we're just about out of time. But what, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, or if some of this data is on your website, what's the best way for them to reach you?
My website is drfrieda.com. They can reach me at drfrieda at gmail.com if they want to write something personal to me as well. So those are the two sites they could reach me. Or my podcast, The Dr. Frieda Show. I forgot about that.
Okay. And I'm sorry, the podcast is?
Yes, The Dr. Frieda Show, DLCTOR, Frieda, FRIEDA Show.
My podcast. Okay. And I assume it's on most any platform?
Yes.
That's great. Well, Frieda, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. I think this is a subject that many parents are very interested in, and that we all should keep an eye on.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. For everybody out there, be with us next week when we're joined by author Bernard Bateman, Dr. Bernard Bateman, as he shares his new book, The King of Consequences, How and Why Synchronicity and Serendipity Happen. For everybody out there, please visit our archives of past interviews at Answers Network, or you can just subscribe to the show through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, Rumble, Spreaker, and so many other platforms. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. I want you to know that we greatly appreciate it, and it's going to help us reach more people. Also, the next time you're on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, please remember, stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts, and if you like them, please spread the word. So for everybody out there, be good human beings, and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.